I want to talk to you tonight about conquering complaining. I know that if you picked up your morning newspaper, that if you were thinking along these lines, you would have noticed that a good many of the articles that you read were concerns and perhaps even complaints about things that were taking place. It is almost so commonplace that we hardly think of news unless we think of bad news. Unless we think of things that people are concerned about or are complaining about. Our society, our lives are geared that way. And so very, very often we are talking about things that trouble us, that bother us, that we are concerned about, and how easy it is for that to turn into complaining. Daniel Webster, as he got old, had a great deal of difficulty in calling people's names. He was well known, of course, and he would meet people and they would want to talk to him, and he would be frustrated that he could not realize and remember the name of the person to whom he was talking. And so he hit on a novel idea. He would say, "Well, how is the old complaint?" And they would begin to describe their aches and pains, and pretty soon he would remember their names. And so nearly everyone has that habit to some degree, and it is a very difficult habit to break. I tried to find a person who looked like a complainer. Any resemblance to anyone here is purely coincidental, but this looks like a fellow who's complaining to me and is pretty unhappy. In my childhood, I was 7 years old before electricity came to my part of Cannon County, Tennessee. And as a child, one of the tasks that we had was to take old newspaper and to use that newspaper to clean the globes of the kerosene lamps. They were very good light sources, but that globe would become smoked up. And so every day, a part of our routine as children was to take a piece of newspaper and put that in there. Our little hands could easily go into the globe, and we would clean that. It was very important that we not obscure the little bit of light that we had. And spiritually, it is very important that we do not obscure the light that we have. And so as we think about conquering complaining and our theme for the year, for those who are visiting with us, that is our theme selected by the elders for this year, that we will be lights in the world. And so you're going to be hearing, God willing, a lot of sermons about how to be a good light. And this one tonight has to do with that passage, and deals with how we can keep from hindering the light that we have by complaining. I'm reading, of course, from that passage that you are familiar with already, from Philippians 2, verses 14 and 15. Where the apostle says, "Do all things without murmurings and complainings, that you may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom you shine as lights in the world." We want to be lights in the world. And this passage tells us in the very introduction to this little paragraph that in order to do that well, that we need to do all things without murmuring and complaining. When we murmur and when we complain, we hinder the light that we might be able to shed before other people, to light their way and to be good lights in the world. The Bible deals with four common types of complainers. There's the whiner. That is a very common type of complaining. All of us know individuals who constantly are whining and complaining about one thing or another. Instead of saying, "I will rise and shine," they say, "I will rise and whine." And so a lot of people spend their time and every day are complaining about one thing or another. The psalmist, Asaph, particularly in Psalm 77, was an individual who expressed that. He said, "In the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord. My sore ran in the night and ceased not. My soul refused to be comforted. I remembered God and was troubled. I complained, and my spirit was overwhelmed. Thou holdest mine eyes waking. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. I've considered the days of old, the years of ancient times. I call to remembrance my song in the night. I commune with mine own heart, and my spirit made diligence search. Here's an individual who is complaining. He is saying, it bothers me, and even during the night I wake up and I'm so troubled by so many things. And so he is crying out to God to help him with his complaining. How dearly we love to detail our aches and pains. And one of the good things that can come out of our visits to hospitals and nursing homes is that as we listen to people, then we realize how much better off we are than many of the people who are there in various ways. And even though it's depressing to listen to that sometimes, we are relieved when we realize here are those who are much worse in many ways than we. You have heard the expression, I complained because I had no shoes until I met a man who had no feet. And when we complain, if we think about it, we can usually find someone who is much, much worse than we. In the book of Matthew, chapter 20, verses 11 and 12, Jesus tells the story of how a man went out and hired people to work for him. He made a contract with them, an agreement, and they were to work for so much. And then later in the day, he hired some others, and later in the day, he hired yet more. And at the end of the day, as he came to pay those laborers, he paid those who had been hired right at the end of the day the same amount as he paid those who had been hired at the beginning. And they complained. Now, what the householder had done was legitimate. It was true to the contract, the agreement. He was paying them what they had agreed to work for, but now they're complaining. And this passage says, they murmured against the goodman of the house, saying, these last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden and heat of the day. They said, it's unfair. You should not pay them as much as we, because they haven't worked as long. When you look at that, you can think, well, there's something in that. And yet, when you back up and look at the obligations of the householder, he was doing precisely what he had promised to do and what they had agreed to do. And so they complained unjustly about that. And of course, the Lord is using that to teach about the bringing in of people that the Jews did not think worthy of the kingdom. And these who are brought in may exist in the jealousy and may suffer jealousy on the part of others who have served God so long. Very easy to complain and to whine about our circumstances in life. You may have heard about the hypochondriac in, I believe it's a little town of Purdy, Tennessee, who had them to put on his tombstone, I told you I was sick. People can complain and complain and complain and whine about their circumstances in life. Another kind of complainer are those who are martyrs, who feel as if here is something that I'm suffering for. I am suffering so much, and I do not deserve all of this suffering. In thinking about the martyr spirit, you look at a person like Moses, and Moses on one occasion in Numbers 11 seemed to have had that spirit. He said to the Lord, wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant? Wherefore have I not found favor in thy sight that thou layest the burden of all this people upon me? Have I conceived all these people? Have I begotten them that thou should say to me, care them in thy bosom, as a nursing father beareth the suckling child unto the land which thou swearest unto their fathers? When should I give flesh to eat to all these people? For they weep unto me, saying, give us flesh that we may eat. I am not able to bear all this people alone. It is too heavy for me. If thou deal thus with me, kill me, I pray thee, out of thy sight, out of hand. If I found favor in thy sight, let me not see my wretchedness. And so there are individuals who come to feel as if they're martyrs. Why me? Why am I the one who must bear this burden? Why am I the one who must suffer in this particular way? This self-pity is hard for the individual to bear. It is very hard for those who are around him to bear. But we all know those individuals who are constantly carrying that attitude of poor old me. I remember as a little child, I had been punished, I'm sure justly, for something, and I went out behind the house, and I made a decision. I said, well, I'll just eat a worm, and I'll die. And they will be so sorry. They will suffer so much. But then I had another thought and realized I wouldn't be around to enjoy their suffering, and so I gave up on that idea. It's very easy to have our own little pity party and to pity ourselves over and over again. Another kind of person who complains a great deal is the cynic. And we live in a cynical world. We live in a world where a lot of people put a spin upon every kind of event, and they are cynical. This is not new. It is not new at all. As a matter of fact, there is a book in the Bible that shows life under the sun, in which a great deal of cynicism is expressed in the very beginning of that book. Listen as this person looks at the way life looks under the sun. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth, the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south, and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. All things are full of labor, man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. And that which is done, is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Summarizing that long paragraph, it is the attitude of same old, same old, same old. That is just the same old thing day after day after day. And life under the sun is filled with cynicism. And this is one of the very worst kind of complaining. We actually become prisoners in our own mind. We box ourselves in with that kind of thinking so that everything that comes up, then we are immediately cynical about it. We mistrust people's motives, and we assume that people are out to get us, or that people are out to some ulterior motive. And it so colors our existence that we are miserable, and we make people around us miserable when we're full of cynicism. I think of those men. 12 of our men here are working in taking the gospel out to the prison. And we go out there 3 times per month. Those men are surrounded by walls and by razor wire. And so they are fenced in. But we can be fenced in because of our thinking. And we can be so fenced in with cynicism that we actually are imprisoned within our own mind. The fourth kind of complainer that the Bible mentions is the perfectionist. And you may know individuals who simply cannot be pleased. And woe be to that child who thinks, I can do nothing to satisfy my mother. I can never please my father. I can't be good enough. Who is a perfectionist, who expects a level of performance that is above us. And that perfectionistic spirit makes people miserable, and it is a type of complainer, and God doesn't want us to be that way. I remember as a beginning debate coach at Calhoun Community College, that we had some good students, and we went over to an early tournament in Mississippi and won second place in a couple of events. I was so proud of our team, and we came back, and I put those trophies on my desk, and the baseball coach happened to walk by, and he looked at those, and he picked them up and looked at them, and he said, "Well, second place." And that kind of gave me a bad feeling. "Why isn't it first place?" he seemed to be saying. And so there are those who are never quite satisfied with the performance of others. And if your husband is that way, if your wife is that way, that needs to be corrected. That is a sin. That is that which makes people miserable, that raises expectations beyond reasonableness. And so the Bible speaks of that, and you probably know this, but it speaks of it particularly with women. And over in Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 8, the proverb writer says that it's better to live in the corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a quarrelsome wife who over and over and over again cannot be satisfied with the things that are provided or the standard of living or whatever from her husband. A second passage in Proverbs 27 verse 15 shows the weariness that perfectionism brings, and says a continual dripping on a rainy day. Drop, 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 drop. It is maddening to have that kind of thing in a house. And it is maddening to have that kind of thing in a relationship with someone else. If they can never be pleased with themselves or with the performance of others. Over in the book of Ezra, chapter 3, when the foundation of the restored temple, the temple that would be rebuilt following the Babylonian captivity, was laid, there were some elderly people there who suffered from this kind of thinking, and the Bible says they wept. And the reason they were weeping was because they remembered the glory of Solomon's temple. And you look at the chronology there, and you see that, yes, there were those taken away who lived those 70 years in captivity, came back, saw the foundations laid, and so they remembered the glory of Solomon's temple. And this was not to be the same dimensions and did not have the same glory as the former temple. How thankful, how appreciative they should have been to have been a part of the restoration and building of the temple, and to have been brought back from that lifetime of captivity, blessed so much by God, building a new temple, and yet they were unhappy. Well, how can we conquer complaining? The first thing is to admit that we have a problem. I need to analyze myself, and you need to analyze yourself and ask, do I complain all the time? Listen to yourself. If we were tape recorded, would we be surprised at what we heard ourselves saying day after day? Ask yourself, am I a constant complainer? Are you sitting there thinking, what a good sermon for my wife? What good thoughts for my husband? I hope she is listening to that. Well, you need to apply it to yourself. You need to sing that song, it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of correction. And so every one of us needs to ask ourselves, do I have a problem? And do I need to deal with that problem? We need to accept responsibility for our own life and for our own soul. Sometimes complaining is the result of shifting responsibility. And I can say, well, it's this person's fault, or it is this set of circumstances that caused me to be where I am and what I'm doing. And so we blame other people, and many people ruin their lives, and then they want to blame God and the church and good people for the condition that they are in. over in the book of Numbers, chapter 11, the children of Israel complained. God had blessed them so much. And when the people complained, they had this wonderful food to eat, but they complained. They remembered all of the things that were served back in Egypt, and they wished that they had that diet again. And so they complained against the Lord. Their complaint on that occasion and on others was sufficient to cause all of that generation to die in the wilderness, except for two individuals, Joshua and Caleb. And so complaining is a very serious business. And unthankfulness for how God has blessed us is very serious business. We need to accept responsibility for our own life and for our own soul. Someone has said, don't complain how the ball bounces if you're the one who dropped the ball. And that's right. We so often get ourselves into situations and then we are quick to blame others. If you had $500 a month, you could afford to rent a house or apartment, and you rent one for $900 a month, and you find yourself in a money bind, who is to blame for that? Who's to blame for that? You could say, well, if this were true, or if I had this or that, but who is to blame for that poor planning on our part? The third thing I suggest to you is that we must develop an attitude of gratitude. I need to be so thankful for all of the good things that God provides for me. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 18, Paul said, in everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. It is God's will that we be full of gratitude, that we be thankful for what he has provided for us. Notice that this passage doesn't say, give thanks when things are going well. Give thanks when everything is just right in your life. What he says is, in everything give thanks. And we need to look even in difficult circumstances and situations and realize that even there is that for which to be thankful. Even in times of crisis and loss, to be thankful that God gives us the strength to survive and the strength to endure and the strength to then be able to help others who are passing along that same road. And so may God give us strength to develop that attitude of gratitude. I read about Mickey Mantle, who was so great in his day, but who, having been a great role model, abused his body and drifted into alcoholism and had a liver transplant. And finally, he sort of woke up and began to talk to groups of people and to say how blessed I was and didn't realize it. How very blessed, how good my life was, how many people I might have helped in a better way. And I let that pass. It is an old story, isn't it? That individuals wake up too late and realize I've missed that opportunity to influence my children. I have missed the opportunity to be a blessing, to say those words and to be that encouragement and to be there for that individual. And it is so saddening when we realize that we have not been grateful and we have missed our opportunity. How easy it is, even in the face of great blessings, for us to be complainers. I heard the story of a policeman who saw a man on a park bench, and he seemed terribly down and very distressed, and so he offered to help him, and the man said, well, 2 months ago I had some relatives who died, and they left me $85,000 and an interest in some oil wells in Oklahoma. And he said, you know, about a month later, I had an uncle in another state who died, left me $150,000. But he said, this month, not a cent. So far, not a cent. Well, it's easy to forget the blessings of the past and how God has brought us to this point and how we do not experience the gratitude that we ought. And then the final suggestion I want to mention to you is that we need to practice speaking positively. The tendency to whine and to have the martyr complex and to be a cynic and to be complaining and to be a perfectionist can only be dealt with by positive replacements. We need to begin to say those words and to do those things that positively replace those very bad habits. In the book of Ephesians, chapter 4, verse 29, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. I would guess that when we read that passage and we think about corrupt communication, that we think about blasphemy and cursing and that sort of thing, and that certainly would be applicable. But complaining is corrupt communication. It is wrong for us to complain in the face of all the good things that God has done for us. And like other sins, we need to repent of our negative and complaining ways and do better. Jesus said, every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. And a lot of complaining would fit into that category of idle and useless words. What are the results of conquering complaining? Well, this passage tells us that we read at the beginning. It says that we may be blameless. You know, when you do not constantly complain, people will tend not to find so much fault with you. They'll find less to blame you with when you are blaming others less. And so the result of dealing with our complaining is that we become blameless. We become better and more influential and helpful to other people when we aren't so negative and when we are not complaining all of the time. The second thing he mentions as a blessing is that you become harmless. And that carries with it the idea of living a life that is genuine, a life that is full of integrity. And we are being truly realistic when we do not complain. It is not realistic for us to complain in the face of all the blessings that we have. And so to be blameless, to be harmless, I know there are other things that are involved in that, but here is one of the ways that we may work on being blameless and harmless in the world in which we live, and that is to deal with our own complaining. And the final result, of course, is that we begin to shine more as lights in the world. We have removed an obstruction to our light. We are not hindering the light that is in us and the light that we may give to others if we first deal with our tendency to complain. When people visit our services or when we talk to people in the community and they know that we are members of the congregation here and we are griping and complaining and fussing, it just may occur to them, do these people really love each other? Do they even like each other? We need to be careful. We need to realize that as to shine or to shine as lights in the world, that we need to have that kind of positive speaking. We need to deal with the reality of God's blessings in our lives. And when we extend our hand and when we smile and when we say hello and when we invite people to the services, then we are in a position to do so much better. How easy it is to fall into the negative habit of complaining. Our house is on a street that runs almost a mile and comes back into itself. Wellington Road is a very good place for walkers. And a lot of people walk there for exercise. And So I'm out in the yard a lot, and so I speak to them. There was one gentleman a few years ago who wore a sour expression, and I could see his lips move, but I couldn't hear him the first several times that I said hello to him. And then we had a very long dry spell about three summers ago, and then we got a wonderful rain, and I thought, he'll smile this morning. And so as he came by my yard, I yelled at him and I said, "Wonderful rain, wasn't it?" He didn't break his stride. He said, "Not near enough." He was in such a habit of complaining that even when such a very good thing had happened, he wasn't happy about it. How easy it is for us to fall into that bad habit. And I encourage myself, and I encourage each of you to take heed to this.